This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I spent a lot of time going over players and fixing the board and, ready for this week. The board is up. But I'm sure it's going to be some tweaking over the next couple of days once you sit in the room and look at more tape and look at it from the standpoint, wondering, do we have it right? I think we got it as close to right as the way we see it as it's going to be. There's not a whole lot that can be done that hadn't been done already. So that's where we are at this point.
Hey, Doug, when we talked in Indy, you said if a quarterback's there at 15, that's the easy choice. In the time since, you guys have traded for Case Keenum. How has that changed your approach to this draft looking at quarterbacks?
Well, the National Football League is a quarterback league. And Case has done a good job over the last couple of years, you know, where he's been. And, we needed a quarterback. And we was able to trade for Case. But that does not put us out the rim of picking a quarterback if it's one there that we like at 15. We don't know who's going to be there at 15. We got some guys that we do like. And if those guys are there, that's a discussion that has to be had. And I'm sure we'll come up and that's a possibility that would happen. But it's also with a lot of other players in this draft that can help us. You know, we'll look at it from that standpoint, too. It all depends on the board, who's highs on the board at that particular time. If that quarterback is the highs and we got a pick, 9 out of 10 is going to be the quarterback. But if it's not, that's a discussion.
And how would you grade this quarterback class? Each guy, it seems like, has some hefty question marks.
It's no different than last year. You know, when the four guys came out, they all was, I think everybody board was probably different than next team board or what have you. And I think it's the same thing here. There's some guys that's, you know, at the top, and then you got guys you move down that you don't think is at the top. And we've done the same thing with the guys that we feel that are top quarterbacks coming out this year. Everybody's not on the same page all the time, and that's where talking it out and discussion comes in. And that, and we're still at that point talking about the guys and where you feel. You know, when you got 18 to 20 guys in the room, the chance of 18 to 20 guys feeling the same way is slim and none. And we had those discussions.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. The NFL draft is Thursday. Doug Williams is addressing reporters in Ashburn about the draft right now. You're hearing it live on The Fan.
Have you kicked scouts out? You know, can you give us a little bit more refining of what goes on in these last 3 days?
No, I've been here going on 5 years now. We hadn't kicked the scouts out yet. We hadn't done that. But I can say this, the scouts be back in town tonight, and I'm sure between tomorrow and Wednesday, we still be doing some cleanup stuff. And they just left on Friday, and they'll be back tonight. And, the thing about here, I think the process, everybody wants to hear what everybody say in that room. You know, now on draft day, everybody's not in there talking about it, but before we get to that point, everybody got an opportunity to voice their opinion. I think that's what makes it so much better.
Doug, with regards to the offensive line, you guys added Eric Flowers in free agency. Do you think that the starting left guard on the team is on the roster now, or is this draft an opportunity to get that player?
It wouldn't be fair to say that he's not on the team. We did sign Eric Flowers to give him opportunity to play left guard. If he can do that, we have a left guard. But other than that, I'm not going to stand here and say he's not on the team. If we draft one, that's going to be the starting guy, because we don't know yet. We got to get him here first. And that's a possibility that we would draft a guy, whether or not he plays guard or a tackle. You never know. It all depends. It goes back to the board.
Doug, back in the combine, you and Jay said that inside linebacker was a position of need for the team, but that was before the league announced that Reuben Foster would not be suspended for this season. Does that still mean inside linebacker is in play, or do you feel like because Reuben Foster is cleared to go for the season, that's not a position you guys would be looking at in the draft?
I think when you look at this football team, every position, actually, I think when you look at our team, just about every position on our team is up. It all depends on that player, no matter what position you play. So I think it'd be unfair just to label one position that we set. I think I can go on the limb. It's one position that we say we feel pretty good, but that don't mean we won't draft one, and that's the boys up front on defense side of the ball. But if there's a defensive lineman in the draft in the right place for the right price, that's a possibility to add to the young guys that's already on the team.
Doug, you guys spent so much time over this process putting together the board, and then I think people have this idea in their heads that Thursday night it still is some kind of chaos in the room. What are the discussions like on Thursday night, or is it as simple as looking at the board and taking the top player on it?
No, because, you know, we got the 15 pick at this time, and that's 14 teams in front of us. And you don't know what's going to happen. Things happen that you don't expect. I go all the way back to the Jonathan Allen draft. You know, everybody was talking about Jonathan going in the top 10 pick, where in our mind going into the draft, Jonathan Allen was not on our mind. But when we got to that point, it was an easy task to pick Jonathan Allen because we didn't expect him there. And we're in the same position here. You don't know what's going to happen, and we're in that position that after about the 10th pick, you know, now you look at the board and you look at about 8 to 9 to 10 guys on that board that you really like, and you put them on the board and you see how they fall or where they go or what have you, and leave you with every time one go, you put another guy up there, you know, to try to fill that position. And when you get to your 2 minutes out in your position, you start eliminating the guys that you have up there and decide, you know, which way you're going to go.
Doug Williams is talking with reporters in Ashburn right now. The draft is Thursday. Grant and Danny, Pete's in for Danny. You're hearing Doug Williams live from the podium on 106.7 The Fan.
Well, the thing about players, you know, we all know that from a media standpoint, you know, we see the guys and we rate them from a different standpoint. I'm talking about the media. But when you spend a lot of time in there, you know, you look at every game that they played, not only this year, but you look at some of the tape from last year, and you're trying to grade them from that standpoint. Some guys that look good on the hoof, did good at the combine, when you put the tape on, might not say the same thing. And you got to be cautious of what you're drafting. You want a guy that plays football and plays every play and make plays. You're talking about outside rusher. That's what you want that guy to do. You want to be able to do. But in our scheme, he also has to be able to drop in coverage too. So you kind of mix it up both ways.
Are there any characteristics in terms of what separates, like, a guy's tape from another guy, like, in terms of getting to the pat, like getting to the quarterback, getting his hand technique?
If he's an edge rusher, you give him a little more credit for getting to the quarterback. That's the whole objective, you know. I go back to, you know, when I was in college, Coach Rob used to always tell us, every man is born equal to become unequal. And the same thing with guys. You know, when you put them on that board, they all don't grade out the same. You kind of put them in a different class or a different area.
Doug, is there a scenario out there where you would envision trading up from 15? And if so, how far would you be willing to go? Is this a situation where you might even try to get into the top 10?
Well, I've said all along, the chance of trading up is a lot slimmer than trading back. I think where we are and what we're trying to do here with this football team, you know, we don't make a move either way. We got to work with what we have. We feel pretty good about that. But we got a chance to trade back. It all depends on who's there. If that trade back comes and whether or not you really like that guy and you want him on your football team, or you put yourself in a position to get a couple more draft picks and some other players that are out there. I'm going to go on the record and say that's a possibility that we won't trade up. But it's a great possibility we'll trade back if that opportunity came.
Doug, if you guys happen to, it all depends on who's where and that kind of thing, but what kind of characteristics do you guys look at in a receiver when you guys are evaluating and guys that you might feel is a good fit with you?
I think when you look across this league at this particular time, when you talk about a receiver, basically, what I think what we need and what we've talked about is what you call a go-to guy. And that guy, you know, in tough times, no matter what the situation, he's going to be able to make plays for you. A tough guy who go across the middle, guys that are blocked for you, guys that want the football. I mean, you don't want them to be all the way divas, but you want somebody who wants the football. If they don't get it, you don't want them in the press saying, they didn't throw me the football. You want them to be team players. But I think, you know, we're looking for a guy that we know that when time – crunch time come, he's going to be in the thick of it. I think that's the most important thing.
Doug, would you kind of going through and looking at your board and doing the things that you've done, there's a lot of things externally that are held as truths in this draft. This person will be here, this person will be there. Do you look at your board and sometimes say, what are these guys talking about? I mean, do you?
No, we all sit there and do that. The possibility of who might be there, you know, who won't be there. And I think all in our mind, we sit in there and we kind of pick who we're picking, who's going to be there for us in the first round, who's going to be there second round, third round, in the fifth round, and so on. But at the same time, you got to be real with yourself. What if they're not there? Then what you do? And I think that's what we do more than anything when we're just sitting in the room after we've probably been talking for 4 hours. You still sit there and you linger, you look at the board, and the board not changing, but you really don't know it's not changing. It seems like it started waving at you. And you just get tired because it's the same board you left yesterday and you're back at it today.
Doug, I know that in a draft you take the best player at the position where you're drafting, but is it fair to say that right now the defensive side of the ball is ahead of the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side has a better chance next year to be a dominant unit?
When you say what you mean, defensive players as a whole?
The whole unit, and the players obviously as well.
If they're strength, I mean, I think, you know, when you're talking about defense, you got to put all the strength base right now in the front line. That's number one. We don't know. We still not don't know at linebacker. We don't know at secondary. We don't know offense. So I think at the end of the day, if you just want to pick one position, you pick the D-line. Other than that, you can't say the defense is ahead of offense, offense ahead of defense at this time.
Will you actually do mock drafts in your rooms, or do you guys do on yourselves to kind of see how things might play out?
We play around a little bit as a group. You know, we give guys an opportunity to pick their first. Like this year, we got, you know, first four picks in the third round. You know, and we sit around and give them opportunity to make their choices, the first four picks, and see where everybody's thinking is. Kind of give you an idea what, you know, what discussion over the last few weeks has gone and what that player think and what that scout thinks and the other scout thinks, and see who's on the same page, who thinking alike or what have you. We do that.
Doug, obviously the draft coincides with how you guys view players on the roster. Two guys on the roster, Ryan Anderson and Monte Nicholson, questions about them and what their role will be going into next year. Where are you at on those two guys, and how does your perception of them right now affect what you may do in the draft?
Well, I think when you look at it, you know, Ryan Anderson right now is a starting linebacker on our team. We had to play today. And I think that's the only way you look at it. And if you look at the time that Ryan played last year, the number of times he played, and the impact, if you sit down from a percentage standpoint, the number of plays that he played, he was pretty impacted when he played. So we feel pretty good where Ryan is today. Monte Nicholson, you know, he's got some things that he has to clean up, and we don't know. It's unfair to put him in anywhere right now until he take care of himself.
Doug Williams, live in Ashburn, answering questions from the Redskins Assembled Media. You're hearing it on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. We're carrying this presser so you can hear the Redskins as they prep for the draft.
We get information on all the players, not no one individual. So we look at all of them and we judge them all the same as far as what the doctors and what the report come out.
So how does the injury affect, not him specifically, but a player like that who has an injury? I'm using him as an example.
You know, you and I both know that injury plays a major role. Character and injury plays a major role to the player that you pick. And, you know, I take my hat off to the scouts that's on the road and the information that they come back with and what they find out. It makes you cringe and makes the young players understand that no matter what you do, somebody know what you do and somebody going to tell on what you do and how you do it. So we find out a lot of information that they probably don't know that we know about them, not only from a standpoint of character, but also the medical standard, which that's what the combine is all about. We get all the medical stuff from the combine.
Doug, as you mentioned, the defensive line is considered, you know, the best unit on this team. But, you know, you also mentioned the scenario like Jonathan Allen a couple years ago where he fell. If a defensive lineman were to fall, I mean, a guy that was considered a top pick, if he were to fall to 15 or whatever you're picking at, would you?
We got one on our team that we picked in the fifth round last year.
Okay. But I mean,
He was there in the fifth round where we had him up on the board. So it's one of the same scenario. A guy like that, you don't pass him up. Okay. You know, so we're in the same boat. You know, we're in the fifth round, and we look up on the board, and that was a player that we had up here. So obviously we thought a lot of that player. You want him on your football team. Okay.
Doug, you talked about the D-line is the best unit you've got on this team. Last year, pre-draft, you told us a few times we got to get better at running back. Is there a position group you're going into this draft saying we've got to get better? This is a talent deficiency.
There's a bunch of positions at this time, JP, that we got to get better at. And, you know, I think it'd be unfair just to name one, but I think it's also fair to give the defensive line a little credit for where they are. But I'm not going to sit here and say we got to get better at any other position, which we know we got to get better overall as a football team.
That was Doug Williams from Ashburn breaking down the Redskins' plans in not only just the first round on Thursday, but the upcoming seven-round NFL draft. We can come back and react to what we just heard next at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. Get your thoughts on what you heard from Doug Williams. This hour, we are going to give you our predictions on the Caps and the Canes on Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Danny's out, Pete's in. Grant and Danny today on The Fan. John Walton, voice of the Caps. You'll hear him calling Caps Canes Game 6 tonight at 7 right here on The Fan. Will be with us at 1 o'clock. Ryan Kerrigan was actually at Game 5, and he wasn't just in the crowd, but he was leading the Let's Go Caps chant on the big screen before the game, and he decided to chug a beer through his sweater like he was TJ Oshie in honor of the injured Capital. We'll ask him about his decision to do that, his Caps fandom, and the offseason, what he wants to see the Redskins do in the draft when he joins us today at 1:30. Speaking of which, let's put a bow on the draft banter for a minute. We'll get into the Caps bottom of the hour at 12:30, fear not. But you just heard Doug Williams' press conference. A couple of things stood out to me there, Pete, and I want to see if you had a similar thought. First, I couldn't believe how honest and candid he was with an answer to one particular question. He was asked about moving up the draft board into the top 10 by Tariq El-Bashir, and his answer was, the chance of trading up is a lot slimmer than the chance of trading back. There's a great possibility we'll trade back if that opportunity came. But he basically said, we are not trading up. We're not in position to do that. We'd like to trade back. A, I like that thinking from the Redskins, to be honest with you. I don't want them to trade up. But B, I am a little bit surprised he was willing to say that today.
Well, I think trading back a lot of general managers will somewhat say that. In other words, that's kind of code where like, hey, call us, you know, on draft day, call us. We may be willing to work with you. That's kind of putting out the bat signal for that opportunity there. Also, I think they also recognize, Grant, the plight that they're in terms of the salary cap. They're going to need more rookies, per se,
young
that are playing
help.
Cheaper, younger help, because of the salary cap implications that they're going to be under, especially with the Alex Smith situation, and he's not really going to be able to play for the money
point.
That he's got. So that's their way of saying, hey, we're willing to work with some people. Just give us a call on draft day if you see something at 15 that you want. The store is open.
He also, and I think he said the right thing here as well, was asked if they'd be willing to take defensive linemen, if they like the guy on the board, even though they're set at that position. He said that they would. He pointed to Tim Settle last year as evidence that they're not going to be unwavering. They're not going to have rules going into the draft class. They're going to take the guys they really like. My philosophy is always this. In the early couple of rounds, you can't draft a player to stash them at a position where you are well-built. You've got to take guys that can immediately help you as starters and be on the field fast. Now, quarterback's its own entity. So if you want to take a QB that sits behind Case Keenum while he keeps the seat warm for a few weeks as a bridge, that's fine. But in the first round, you can't use a pick on a D lineman when you already have got three guys that start and four guys in a rotation that you like. To me, you got to go get either an outside linebacker who plays two to three downs at a time. an inside linebacker who you think is going to start over Mason Foster, frees you up to release him and create some money. A safety, you don't have a starter right now opposite the highly priced free agent you brought in Landon Collins. Right now it'd be Monte Nicholson, or they don't really trust. The player they draft in the first round has to be on the field a lot. And even if that's a tight end and you want to play him with Jordan Reed and release Vernon Davis, I'm cool with that. If it's a wide receiver, you got nothing but a vacancy there where you need help. He said, we need a number one guy. We need, I think the term he used was a go-to guy at wide receiver. But you can't afford to draft, and they only have a couple of these positions, offensive tackles, another one, a player at a spot where you're already kind of set. You want to do that after the fourth round? And now we're just trying to find football players who can make a roster. Fifth, sixth, seventh. Best player available all day. I don't care what position they are. Take someone who can make your 53-man. But early on, Pete, you better take someone who helps you win when you open the season against the Philadelphia Eagles in September.
Cited the example, Jonathan Allen. They had no idea Jonathan Allen was going to fall into their lap the way he did. In fact, he said they weren't even focusing on him because they thought he was going to be long gone. Every now and then, the draft works for you. Someone that ends up there that's not supposed to be. Perhaps one of the top offensive linemen ends up down at your spot. As I mentioned earlier, and Andre Diller, if he gets to that spot, you have to think long and hard about potentially bringing him onto your football team. So I think, again, a lot of it certainly depends on what happens in front of you, but knowing what they have, the price to pay to move up for what you would move up for, especially if it's quarterback, I don't think those quarterbacks exist in this draft. There's high risk, high reward with Kyler Murray, but moving up for one of the other players, I don't know. Even if that player maxes their ability, I'm not sure the bang is going to be worth the buck that it might cost you to move up to get said player.
I think they probably like Drew Lock. In fact, I know they like Drew Lock. I think they probably like Daniel Jones. They like Dwayne Haskins. I don't know if they love any of these guys. To move up a bunch, whether that's several picks or even three, four picks, you got to love somebody. It takes an amount of selections and a compensation package that means you are marrying, not dating, that player for the next several years. So you better be right, and I'm with you. I'm just not sure they have the conviction to do that. We didn't hear a question necessarily about the outside linebacking position. You did hear that Doug Williams was asked about Ryan Anderson, and he said that as of right now, Anderson is their starter, that they are preparing to move forward with him there. Another interesting point about a guy on the roster, what we've speculated about Ereck Flowers is absolutely the case. Flowers was drafted early first round by the Giants, was a bad tackle, and fell out of a starting job and eventually fell out of New York completely and had to go latch on elsewhere last year in season in Jacksonville. Williams said he's going to get a chance to be their starting left guard. He said, we brought him here to see if he could play guard. If he can, he'll start there. Didn't rule out taking a left guard, but I thought him confirming that was worth passing along. If you missed any part of Doug Williams' press conference, it'll be podcasted and available for you as part of our normal show at thefandc.com, grantanddanny.com/audio podcasts when we are done. Next, what do the Caps have to do to repeat their Game 5 dominance? A 6-0 shutout of the Hurricanes. How do they carry it over? Will they win and end the series tonight? You're listening to The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Staying in the zone, behind the net, Kuznetsov. Blue line fired by Carlson. Crept in just a bit toward the high slot. And now Stahl trying to clear. Nice glove there from Carlson to fire it to the front of the net. And Mrazek, they score! It came off and was pushed in. And Washington has taken a 4-0 lead here in Game 5.
Tom Wilson on that goal for the Capitals. That was a keep for the ages by John Carlson. Leaping full extension. Catching that puck like he was a center fielder robbing a home run at the fence.
Shows you how good of an athlete he is.
Yeah, no kidding. Drops the puck, fires it netward, and eventually Willie bangs it home. We started the show today talking about the Caps eviscerating the Canes. Just a dominant Game 5 performance, 6-0 final. They were unbelievable. Everything they did worked. Every button they touched was the right one. Carolina had no answer. We saw the Hurricanes play a similar game against the Capitals, though, in Game 3. And even though they did win the following game in Game 4, Washington, in a lot of ways, carried play, specifically in the second and third periods of that game, a one-goal loss. And I bring that up, Pete, to say momentum's not really a thing game to game in these series around the NHL right now, specifically when the series is shifting venues. So, yeah, you can play an unfathomably impressive Game 5, but then in the next game, 2 days later, in a different venue, in a different barn, everything can look different. Do you think we get another version of the Capitals' best game? I don't think 6-0 can be replicated. But do you think, you know, that was clearly the A-plus version of themselves. Do they have another one of those in them, or is tonight a little bit more of a normal back-and-forth seesaw matchup?
See, I go back to what I asked Joe Beninati when we talked about all of the players that the Hurricanes had lost. We start to look at their roster and look at the guys that had fallen by the wayside here. If they do get a couple of those guys back, again, that'll be a way for Carolina to generate at least early energy in the game. I just don't know right now if they are deep enough. If the Capitals don't necessarily dominate the way they did on Saturday, but if the Capitals play with the equal desperation that they played with, and play with the championship savvy that they played with the other night, then I think this game at least gives them a shot. You have no guarantee whether Mrazek, you know, could stand on his head and keep them in the game just like he did in Game 4. In Game 4, it's a 2-1 game. Goalie's making saves at the other end. You're carrying play. You're out shooting them most of the game there. Mrazek made a couple of big saves, obviously made the big one late in the contest when the Capitals got a shocking 2-on-1 on a turnover. Made the huge save from in the slot. So if Mrazek stands on his head, Carolina has a chance. And I just think right now the Capitals are deeper. And even though Carolina may get some guys back, those guys are not going to be at 100%. So if Washington gives us the same type of energy, the same type of desperation, championship savvy again tonight, I think they carry the play and at least give themselves a chance to knock this series out tonight.
Let's open up the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines for you at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. Do the Caps eliminate the Hurricanes tonight? Do they win Game 6? It'll be their first road win of these playoffs. They are 0-2. They were 10-3, by the way, on the road in the postseason last year on their way to the Stanley Cup. So think about that. You lose tonight, you have to go 10-0 down the stretch to equal the road record of last year away from Capital One Arena in the postseason. 800-636-1067 is the number. I actually do think they end this series. Pete, before it started, I said Caps in 6. I gave Carolina 2. I thought they would win 1 in D.C. of the initial 2 and 1 at home. I didn't think they would win back-to-back games at any point. In fact, the series hadn't played out really much like I thought it was going to at all, because I didn't see the Game 3 stinker coming. I didn't see Carolina outperforming the Capitals for much of the first 2 games on the road, even though they lost those 2 games in D.C. But I think in the end, even though I'm a process over results guy, we'll have gotten to where we should have been, which is they won a couple of games. They took care of home ice at times, but the Capitals in 6 sent them packing, and we're on to the second round. I think it happens tonight. It'll be a much closer game. I've got 3-2 Washington. Here's where my confidence comes from. 1, Braden Holtby is locked in. He's been tremendous. He's coming off of his 7th playoff shutout, the most ever by a Caps goaltender. Didn't you think he played well even in giving up 5 goals in that Game 3 debacle?
Yeah, because he was facing so much rubber that, you know, he really did keep... I mean, that game could have gotten even further out of hand had he not played at the level in which he played. He was simply hung out to dry. I mean, you're a duck in a shooting gallery at that point.
So I love the way he's playing, and I think that the addition of Jonas Siegenthaler has been a game changer. I really think that now, and it's not even that he's great. I'm not building him up to be some unimpeatable force. What I am saying is they're now righty-lefty on three lines.
They got balance.
Exactly. And they don't have to worry about putting Orlov and Orpik out there at the same time to wonder who's supposed to be on left and who's supposed to be on the right. They don't have Carlson shooting from the offside. Everything's back to how it should be.
And one trend you like as a result of that, not necessarily maybe directly, but certainly indirectly, is the fact after the 45-shot debacle in Game 3, you know, you only allowed 24 shots in Game 4 and then 30 shots in Game 5, which is still five below their regular season average. So you got the Hurricanes back to the types of games that you beat them at in the regular season, because that's why you swept the season series, because you were pretty adept at keeping them below what is normally their shot total and their amount of activity.
Plus, you got the bottom six rolling, finally.
You got to have ancillary scoring, man. You got to have some. Well, I mean, look, again, we go back to the DSP seven goals last year.
Right.
You know, you got to have somebody be a hero out of that third or fourth line. Somebody that just comes up consistently and is a factor, which makes the other team account for those lines by doing certain things and maybe using their defensemen a couple of extra minutes, because now all of a sudden they have to account for that third line, or they have to account for that fourth line being effective. So you may see a top defensive pairing for an extra 2 or 3 minutes per game that you might not normally see, because you have to acknowledge all the lines.
Both the third and the fourth lines coming off their best game of the series. Alex is in Fredericksburg, wants to chime in. Caps Canes tonight. You can hear the game right here on the Fan at 7 o'clock. How you feeling about the matchup?
Well, I just wanted to elaborate on what you said earlier about how, you said that one of you guys said that it was, you feel like it would be caps in six either way. It wasn't necessarily the way I thought it would be as well, but I feel like in the end, if it ends up being, you know, caps in six, just like I had said, that I'll feel pretty comfortable with that. And also, I just wanted to say how last year, I think it was the Tampa Bay series when, I think it was tied up 2-2 and everybody was just like freaking out because they thought, oh, this, you know, this is it. The Cinderella's over. And then,
well, they were actually down 3-2. They lost Game 5 bad.
Oh, so they were down 3-2. So, yeah. Okay, well, either way, I'll still say this. I think it was when they were down 3-2 when Holtby had those two straight shutouts. I have a feeling it's going to be something similar now. I feel like Holtby's just completely locked in right now, and he's not messing around anymore. So I think it'll be 4-2 after tonight. And as far as my final score, I say if it's not a shutout, it'll at least be, they'll only give up a goal.
Okay, I dig it. I would like that. I mean, they would have given up one goal in 120 minutes of hockey, which would be a job well done from Braden Holtby. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Next, an update. Peyton Manning has been heavily recruited by Monday Night Football. Seems like we might have some info to pass along on that. You are listening to the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is in for Danny today. Big final hour. Going to be great. You should listen to the entire thing. That's just my opinion, but I think it's probably a worthwhile opinion in this case.
We would appreciate your time spent listening to the Fan next hour.
John Walton at 1. He is the voice of the Capitals. You'll hear him on the call in about 6 hours and 10 minutes of Game 6. He'll break the game down for you, preview the matchup. And at 1:30, Ryan Kerrigan of the Redskins, DC heartthrob turned married man with child. He's got a baby girl about a week before my baby was born. Kerrigan had his own daughter, and he was at Capital One Arena drinking a beer through his jersey to honor TJ Oshie this weekend. We'll talk to him about that all coming up. Again, he's at 1:30 today. Peyton Manning will not be joining Monday Night Football. This is from PFT. His relationship with ESPN is going to expand in 2019, but it's not going to include an expansion that ESPN was hoping for. Michael McCarthy of SportingNews.com, I think, originally broke that Peyton Manning turned down a chance to be in the Monday Night Football broadcast booth this coming year. The report comes with a caveat, barring a miracle, but it appears at this point that Peyton is not in play. Basically, he could have become the highest paid person at ESPN if he wanted to take that job. He could have gotten that What was Gruden making? Close to $10 million, $8 million,
well,
something like
Stephen
that
Well, Stephen A. at 10 was going to be their highest paid employee based on the story we read. So that means they were going to have to give Peyton somewhere in that same amount of money. That just I just find, would they be able to recoup the advertising? And certainly they would get the nationwide advertising because Peyton's a spokesperson for them. I'm sure that would
But think about
come
all
aboard.
The platforms they'd use him on, Pete. He's doing a bunch of film breakdowns that sees on ESPN, whatever it is. Plus, I think. I mean, he's all over whatever app they're pushing right now.
If they add somebody with Joe Tessitore and Booger now, I think it's Pat McAfee. They brought McAfee on the Greenberg show, and he's got a tremendous personality. He's outspoken. He will not be afraid to be critical within good taste. I don't think he would be critical in the bounds of bad taste as an analyst, but I do believe he would be a guy that would be willing to be a little bit more of an edgy kind of guy, that if a guy's not performing, he'll come out and say it. Play's not, you know, if a play looks bad, he'll come out and say it. I think it would be the perfect complement to Booger, who I think is terrific at breaking down football, and Joe Tessitore, who is as capable of anybody that they have over there to do play-by-play.
Yeah, I'm out on McAfee on Monday Night Football. There was a movement for that. He kind of started where people were hashtagging to get him into the mix. He called a game on Fox last year. He's kind of a free agent of sorts for calling games. And he's entertaining. That would be one word I would use for him. He is uber entertaining.
Tremendous social media pull, too. Can't underrate that.
He checks a lot of boxes. You said outspoken, and that's very true. He comes from a background. I saw a lot of his stuff and heard a lot of his stuff with Barstool Sports. Mm-hmm. He left them to do his own thing now. That's not quite what you'd expect for Monday Night Football, which is why it'd be an interesting, probably a successful hire in the eyes of a lot of people. My issue with Pat McAfee would just be, stylistically, he's not really for me in-game. I watched his call of the Fox game, and he was screaming on a fake punt over the top. I would rather just be educated by someone who's very smart, knows the X's and O's, and I think he might be able to provide that. Clearly, on special teams, he can. I would think he'd have as good a feel for offense and defense as anybody in a booth right now. But he's very much a kind of, you know, loud laughter and very loud screaming and look at this. I'm not about that. He's contracted with the WWE. That's a much better fit for me for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I even listen to his podcast. I'm entertained by his podcast. So this shouldn't be taken as I'm anti-Pat McAfee. I follow him on social media. He's hilarious. I just don't want that in the Monday Night Football booth. I would rather a more serious, kind of credible, normal broadcast than a character, which I think is what he is. He is an entertaining, kind of half funny. He's a stand-up comedian at times.
Was John Madden not an entertainer as part of his
not like
delivery?
Pat McAfee is.
You know, I think we have to translate to 2019 and
but
essentially
I don't want to. That's my point.
Right, but I think a lot of other people are, because look at the dwindling audience in terms of totality that we're seeing. We're not seeing as many faces, while they are dominating the landscape in terms of ratings still. We're not seeing the totality of people, and everybody is trying to find that next guy. Who's going to bring in those people that are not diehard? We're going to watch football on Monday night. It could be Joe Tessitore. It could be Joe Namath. We're going to watch Monday Night Football because we like football. But to get those people who are the casual viewer now, who may be stepping away from the TV for Monday Night Football because, say, Chiefs Seahawks doesn't rivet them on a Monday night, they're trying to find a personality that's going to rein those people back in to maybe watch a little bit more of Monday Night Football.
So if you're asking me, is it a smart hire? I think the answer is yes. That's different than what I like the hire. I mean, my answer is, do I want to watch Monday Night Football with Pat McAfee as a color commentator? And the answer to that is no. I'd prefer to. Charles Davis should be on the booth in Monday Night Football. Solomon Wilcots, I would take in the booth on Monday Night Football. There are a lot of analysts I can give you that I would love to see break games down in that role. As far as what it accomplished by going the route of McAfee, I think it'd be smart from a business standpoint. I think you're right. They would get a guy who relates to a young audience, who's got a great social media following. It's just not my preference for how I want to consume games. But what you're saying is correct. In 2019, these networks are going in a different direction. Look at Sunday Night Baseball, which, by the way, is not all that well reviewed right now. But they
just read awful announcing on that, man. I mean, there's a column every week about about Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN.
But they basically turned that broadcast no longer into a breakdown of every game. It is now kind of an ongoing radio, like baseball radio talk show with a game in the background. and you're watching the game, and they'll tell you what's happening, you know, base hit to left field. Yeah, the Royals yesterday got into a benches clearing brawl, and they're just talking for 3 hours.
See, the problem there, the problem there is Vaskersian, who is a better than average play-by-play guy, unfortunately becomes more talk show host than traffic cop when you're dealing with A-Rod and Jessica Mendoza as color analyst in that situation. As the play-by-play guy in a three-man booth, you simply have to be a traffic cop, and you have to reduce the amount of time your opinion is interjected because you're paying the other two people to analyze what's going on and have an opinion. As the play-by-play guy, that's your job. You do play-by-play. Stick to that, and you kind of keep it less cluttered. Right now, there's a lot of clutter with the Sunday night baseball booth.
But the specifics of that booth doesn't matter at all. What I'm saying, Pete, is that's the style that these networks are now going for. It doesn't matter. Pick whatever play-by-play color people you want, and we can get into their pros and their weaknesses and their whatever they got going for them. But it's, let's have a conversation. It's the same thing local TV is doing. Now look at the hosts now on some of these sports TV networks are either radio personalities or they're people sitting around. You're not wearing suits anymore. You're just kind of talking. And mm-hmm. I think everyone's realizing this is now personality driven, and you want people to want to have a beer with whoever they're watching talk about their sports, or in this case, call games now. John Walton calls games. I'd love to have an unsweet iced tea with John Walton. He's with us next right here on Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.